I'm Samantha Goldman, and you're listening to the Food Explorers Podcast. As a parent, I know you dream of your child having a happy and healthy relationship with food. But I also know how exhausting and confusing it can be when your child just won't eat. In my background as an occupational and feeding therapist, I've helped hundreds of families, both in and out of the hospital, bring the magic back into mealtime and development. And I want to help you do that too. In this podcast, I give you the full scoop on the tools and tips you need to start helping your child confidently explore new foods while having fun. Please be advised that this is not medical or therapy advice and is just for general and informational knowledge. Let's get to the show. Hello, friend. Welcome back to the Food Explorers Podcast for our very last episode of the year. And we're going out with a bang. A little heads up, I'll be taking the last 2 weeks of the year off, and then the podcast will pick right back up either the first or second week of January. I'm deep into yearly planning right now, so I would love to know if there's any topics or special guests you would love to see in the podcast in 2024. Head over to @DrSamGoldman on Instagram and send me a little message to know what topics you would be interested in. Okay, back to today's episode. I am beyond excited to introduce this week's guest, Stephanie Fernandez. We met a couple years back through Instagram, and I was instantly drawn to her parenting values and tips. JR and I actually traveled to Copenhagen this past year, so we got to meet Stephanie in person, and she is everything I expected and more. So I am really just delighted to share her message on the podcast. When it comes to wanting to yell less as a parent or parenting trauma, she is incredible. I honestly had a hard time limiting my questions for this episode because I just had so many. I know so many of you can relate to the feeling of wanting to positive parent or use positive discipline and promising yourself you're not going to yell. But then life just becomes too overstimulating, especially with a sensational child, and you kind of lose it. Stephanie shared so many amazing techniques in this episode with us that I know I'll be using when the day comes that JR and I become parents, and that I will use with my clients and even my nieces and nephews now. I've already been using one of her tips about responding when I instantly feel an emotion, and it's been so helpful. But I don't want to give away too much. You'll hear it in the episode. So without further ado, let me tell you a little bit about Stephanie. As a cycle starter, Stephanie is passionate about teaching mothers in all stages of motherhood effective tools for better well-being and a deeper connection with their children. She is convinced that the quality of the relationship a mom has with herself determines the quality of the relationship she has with her child. It all starts with us as mothers, even before conception and birth. As a therapist, Stephanie facilitates deep healing, often generational, of childhood trauma that still manifests in dysfunctional parenting patterns such as yelling, shaming, or emotional neglect. Stephanie's mission is to help raise a healthier next generation. Okay, I am so excited. Let's get to the show. Hey, Stephanie, I am so excited to have you here today. So excited to hear all of your parenting tips and advice and about everything you're doing right now. Before we start, because I know you and I have chatted quite a bunch, so I just want to dive in. But can you give us a little introduction to who you are and what you do?
Hi, Samantha. Thank you for having me. Of course. My name is Stephanie Fernandez. I live in Copenhagen, Denmark with my boys. They're 6 and 4, and I'm married to a guy who is from Portugal. So we are an international family that raises third culture kids. And I'm a parenting coach, a therapist that is certified in RTT and BWRT. It's not very important like what this is. I just help parents to yell less, mostly.
Oh, I love that. And we are definitely getting into that today. But something else that you are very passionate about that you've talked about a lot is actually trauma-informed parenting, which I find super interesting. So for those people in our community who maybe don't know what that is, can you give a little introduction to that and what led you there?
Yeah. So the yelling less is the gateway into the work that I do. Because often we as parents, I mean, if you are not in the mental health field, you don't really know if you have trauma or what trauma is and how it shows up. But it does show up as not being able to regulate your emotions in a healthy way. And that often shows up as yelling. So trauma is when something that happened to you that made your body completely overwhelmed and you didn't know how to deal with it. It doesn't need to be the same thing for everyone. Like a car accident can be traumatizing. And then you have something that's called PTSD. And then you can have a car accident and you are not harmed physically. And you're also mentally okay. You can just work through it by telling someone about it. They are first responders. They talk to you about it and you go home and you're good. So it's not really what happens to us. It's mostly what our body and our mind makes of it when something happens to us that is too overwhelming for our system to process. And I specialize in complex PTSD, which is a trauma that happens in early childhood of over a long period of time. So it's not really that one-off thing like a car accident, even though I do also help moms who have birth trauma. When there was this one incident at birth that was really traumatizing, then I also help resolving that. But mostly what shows up as a problem in our relationships with our kids is complex PTSD when it's not resolved.
Oh, that's so interesting. I did not realize that you specialized specifically in that complex one. So can you tell us a little more about that? What kind of complex PTSD things have you seen that might be common for people if they're kind of wondering?
Yeah. A lot of people that I work with, they say to me, no, I had a good childhood. Like everything was fine until we dig a little bit deeper. Because a lot of people think, you know, if you didn't experience physical violence, if your parents didn't spank you, if you had food on the table, then things were good. However, there's a big part which is the emotional neglect in childhood. Like someone didn't know how to respond to your tantrums as a four-year-old, didn't know how to coach you through that breakup with your best friend when you were seven in school. Feeling alone with big emotions as a child over a long period of time, many, many years, when that becomes the norm, that is complex PTSD. And then these are moms who don't know how to stay comfortable with uncomfortable feelings. And we all have those uncomfortable feelings. The frustration, the anger. Anger is very uncomfortable. We are just trying then to mask it with even more anger or sadness. Then another thing that I see a lot that is a symptom of complex PTSD is actually the numbing. So when, you know, the thing that, I don't know, parents say, I'm not worth anything here. I do everything for everyone and I just don't do anything anymore. It's that fawn response in the nervous system. It's like, I completely give up. And then I also give up feeling my feelings. And then I'm not even fighting anyone anymore. I just feel worthless. I feel invalued. I don't feel that people appreciate what I do in this house. And I just give up. And I'm not feeling anything. I'm not feeling the bad feelings, but I'm also not feeling the good feelings. I completely shut down. So that's also a symptom of CPTSD.
Oh my goodness. I can think of so many parents who have said those exact words to me before. So I think it's maybe even more common than we pick up on sometimes. And I think that's really interesting that you've said a lot of the times when they come to you, they don't even realize that they've had these experiences in the past. It's actually starting as they're coming to you for anger or for numbness or for something else.
Yeah. Very interesting is also when they come to me and say, you need to fix my child because they have a problem with their tantrums. There's something is not normal. They're not sleeping at night. Our neighbors must think that we are a mad family. Like the noise level in our house is unbelievable. There's something wrong with them. So please, what do I do? Help me fix them. And I don't work on behavior. I work with underlying reasons. And there's always a reason why kids show these sort of behaviors. And they're very difficult for every parent. They are. Like the tantrums, even though you try everything that's written in the books, what you need to say to validate, what you need to do to give space, to stay with them. But if you feel so overwhelmed and the tantrums, they come in close periods, or they are taking a long time until they are done, or they happen in Costco, or you are in Tesco and you are on the checkout line and you just want this to stop. You feel like, I'm the only one who has such a child. I'm the only one who doesn't know how to deal with that. And it's not true. That's what we see. We just see things that we want to see, and we always look for the proof. I'm a bad mom. I have a bad child. So please, can you fix my child? And then we do the inner work. Then we deep dive, depending on if the parent is ready for that, because that also means, you know, we need to do some introspection and look at our own behaviors, because our behaviors as moms, as parents, they do influence our kids' behavior. If we are yelling around in the morning because they don't get up, they don't get ready for school, they don't eat their breakfast, they still didn't brush their teeth, I mean, but then we cannot expect that they are calm and they are not yelling when they are overwhelmed. So the mirror neurons that our children have, they work really well. So they also work well when we're calm and when we are relaxed and when we're solution oriented.
Oh, I am all about the co-regulation. You know that. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Moms who yell too much, because I think that that is so relatable. I think so many of the moms I talk to, even, you know, our friends, our family, I've heard so many of the parents in our lives say, I want to yell less.
Yeah.
And I think that's so relatable. But like you started to say, we often shift that blame to the kids. We yell because our kids do this. We yell because of this. So what is that connection that you've kind of put together about working on yourself as a parent, and then how that carries over to kids? Also, I know we talked about those motor neurons, but can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So we are all great parents before we had kids. We all have those, you know, amazing weekends where we're just relaxed and we're on a couch with our spouse and we have dinner and we go to the movies, or we go to the museum and everything is fine. And then we have kids. And all of a sudden, I didn't recognize myself anymore. Like, who is this person? Who am I? I'm talking like this. I sound like my mother. This is not me. That's when the first impulse is, well, I was well before I had kids, so you trigger me. So there must be something with you. And that's true. I mean, a relationship is always two ways. There is a dynamic here. However, it's not about blame, but because we feel so uncomfortable with who we are, who we become, how we show up with the people that we love most, this is like a threat to the self. So we immediately put the blame on the child because it just feels safer for us. However, there's also a lot of guilt and shame around yelling too much, which is also a threat to the self. But our children just show us things that we didn't see before because there was no trigger. It doesn't mean that it wasn't there before. It was just not, it didn't have to come out. That survival mechanism of yelling, it is a survival mechanism to find a new place in the family as a mom, as a woman, as a person. That is just triggered by this new little human. Now, if we have the ability to look beyond, well, actually that little person, 4-year-old, 3-year-old, or a crying infant, I mean, they're not doing anything on purpose. They cannot even manipulate that much. Like, it's not possible cognitively. When a lot of parents say they're so manipulative, they do this because they know they get what they want, it's actually not the case. But so we need to step a little bit out of what we believe children are. Are they inherently good? Or do they have flaws? Like, do they manipulate and are they bad people? So that's the shift that someone that works with me needs to already do before they work with me. Because otherwise, the concept how I work doesn't hold for them. I can guide parents into the, you know, kind of letting go of that belief that there's something wrong with my child or they do that on purpose. But actually, they come into this world without any agenda. The only agenda they have, actually, is to connect with us. And if that triggers us, then there's something that happened in our childhood that became an implicit memory in our body that is being reactivated. Ooh, that really feels uncomfortable. And if we go a little bit deeper, a lot of the times parents say, well, I was never allowed to talk back. So I get really triggered when they talk back because this is disrespectful. Well, if we isolate the situation from your own experience, is it really disrespectful? Maybe it is, according to your values and standards of how you want to talk to and how you talk to your child. But then we need to shift from the blame of, you know, don't be so disrespectful and punishment to how could you say that differently? And a lot of what kids learn just need a lot of repetition. And they don't remember things just because we say once at dinner, can you please say please when you want a glass of water? I don't want you demanding. I want that you ask nicely. So we need to also ask nicely. I also need to ask nicely my husband, would you mind getting up and bring me a fork, please? Because I don't have one. Or do I sit down and say, look, who put the table? I don't have a fork. Great. That's just a lot of, that's actually where the connection is. So if we work on ourselves, our kids see us as a role model and they see that having big feelings is actually okay. Like mommy has big feelings, but she's not hurting anyone with them. She's not yelling too much. I'm still angry and it's a normal feeling to have. And I get very frustrated. And I also don't like a lot of things my six-year-old does or says. But truth is, I don't have to like everything that he does or says. I don't. And that's when we sometimes get it a bit wrong and we are stuck in a one-way road, I feel, as parents, is when we feel, but I don't like what you do. Well, okay, but you don't have to. You can still say, I can still say, we just finished dinner and my six-year-old had a hard day at school and he was really unpleasant to have dinner with. And what I said was, well, the way you talk to your brother, I can see that you're very unregulated. You're not feeling well. Could that be? He starts crying. Like his whole anger that was there to protect him before just fell off. And he sank back in his chair and he said, I had this fight with my best friend. It was really hard. And now you picked me up early today and I couldn't resolve it. And that's why he was talking to his brother in a really unpolite manner. But me telling him to stop talking to his brother like that would not solve anything. It would just shame him for feeling that something that he's not even aware of. The moment I give him space and the opportunity actually to feel, this is the moment when he just relaxes. So maybe I have lost my train of thought here, what I wanted to say. No, that's the link. The link is we have to stay calm and also grounded in ourselves so that our kids can develop healthily with their emotions. And it's just so important that they feel those emotions. Parents tell me, but they are so angry. And I say, that's a good thing. It's good it comes out. But maybe we can look at what's underneath that anger. Because if we only focus on the anger, you're not helping your child. So you need to be calm and don't feel threatened by their anger or their tantrums or their unpolite words. And then they trust you to open up.
Oh my gosh, that story hit me in the heart so hard. Oh, but it's also such a great example of what you were talking about where Behavior is a form of communication. There was something under there. There was that more.
Yeah.
And when you got to it, I mean, it totally changed the entire table.
Yeah. And I didn't even have to assume anything, or I just said, what I hear is that you're not feeling well, the way you talk to your brother. And that was all I ever have to say to him when he's unpolite or really frustrated and stressed. That's all I say. And it always works.
That's so sweet. So another thing that you mentioned in there that really kind of stuck out to me was talking about how as a parent, we feel it and we feel stuff kick in when your child is having a hard time. And you're like, that trigger wasn't there before. And something my sister had once said to me that also stuck in my mind is as she had her first child going through toddlerhood, she's like, I have never felt my fight or flight response get so activated so quick as when my toddler has a meltdown. So that totally stuck out to me when you were talking about you need to learn how to regulate yourself so that you can help them.
And that's the hardest.
That is the hardest. And that kind of leads me into my next question with you, that I think most people know the feeling of getting up in the morning, promising yourself today is going to be the day that you are not going to lose it. You're going to keep your cool no matter what happens. And then you go through your day and you burst. You know, a lot of the times that fight or flight response kicks in, it gets too overwhelming. Why does this happen when parents have the best intentions of not letting it happen?
Yeah. And I know that. I know that it can be so disappointing when you feel, but I don't want this. And I really, really, really promise myself and my child to be better next time and to do better. But I just can't. And that's the perfect sign that there's something else going on, that you just cannot, with, even though intentions are amazing, they can really set you up for a beautiful day and they make you aware and you are, it's a bit like the small gratitude exercises that we can do at the end of the day. Intentions in the morning can really help. However, we cannot and should not underestimate the fact that we are also just humans that come with a whole lot of programming before we had kids. So when parents, even though they have the best intentions, still are overly angry and respond in ways that they cannot control, that's when I use a tool that's called brainworking recursive therapy, where we go into that little window between stimulus and response. This is the same thing that happens when I throw you a ball and you catch it. It's so automated. You don't even think. Or you drive and you know exactly which foot you need to use. And if you look in the mirrors, you exactly know what to do. You're not even thinking about it. So that automatic response is the same thing that happens with the yelling and the outbursts. If there is a stimulus that your brain identifies as, oh, this happened before, I know what we need to do. We just yell because last time it worked because they stopped. Or I know this works because my mom used to yell like this and I stopped. So it does work on a behavior level, but it doesn't make us feel good. But there is this circuit in the brain. The neurons are there. They are wired together for, you know, this is what your child does. And then you yell. And in this little window that we consciously cannot detect, because it's like my lid flips like this, Stephanie. I don't even notice. So you're telling me I need to breathe and I need to count till five and I need to step out of the room and I just need to take some time for myself. I don't even notice. All of a sudden I'm there in the red from the green. And that's where this BWRT method that I use, it's a bit similar to EMDR, is where we desensitize the mind towards the trigger. So your child can do whatever they want and you just don't respond anymore because your brain doesn't remember there is a need for fight or flight. It's just not there. And that's when true calmness helps with your child. So you don't even have to fake it. You don't even have to pretend being nice. Because they notice. They notice when your body is tight. My little one used to say when we made pancakes on Saturday morning, "Why are you clenching your jaw, mommy?" I didn't even notice. And I was always so tense with him because the smallest thing that I did wrong, like if the pancake tore a little bit, if it was too brown on one side, if I used the wrong tool to flip it over, like what small things would set him off like completely. And I was, of course, always tense because I wanted to make everything right and not to have that tantrum at 7:30 on a Saturday morning. And I didn't notice that I would clench my jaw. That was just a response from my body to kind of try to cope with it, to tighten up even more so that I can just keep it inside. And I thought I'm calm, but he knew, he felt, "You're not calm, mommy. You're only calm when your body's not reacting." And even though we are having the best intentions, sometimes when we see it's not working, we just need a little bit of a different help so that we also see some, you know, progress, because that's what we need also as moms. We also need to see, well, there is some positive progress. I can actually handle it. Something else might come up, but I am not stuck in the same pattern that I used to be. And that can give us a good feeling. So we also need that. We need sometimes a little help that pulls us out and shows us a different way.
Yeah, getting out of that pattern, that makes so much sense, that it's like an automatic switch. So there was also a post on your Instagram kind of way back as I was scrolling through that got my attention about how it only takes 90 seconds for the emotion to be felt and completed. Mm-hmm. That seemed, when I was reading that, I was like, that is so little. And yet it feels like we feel it for way longer than this. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more?
It is. Yeah, it's something that sounds a bit unconventional. Like, can this be really true? Are you just saying that to calm me down or what? Especially the tantrums of my child, they seem to take longer than 90 seconds. The thing is that if they take longer, if the feeling stays in the body longer than 1.5 minutes, then there is another thought that triggers another feeling. So that's when we are in the the hamster wheel of thoughts. First, it starts with, nobody appreciates me here. Why am I actually cooking dinner? They're not even eating it. Then you sit down and they're really not eating it. And then you go like in your head, and I spent all this time and I spent all this money, and that feeds the feeling and it feeds it more and more. And you feed it for more than 1.5 minutes because you cognitively in your mind, you don't let go, but also subconsciously, you have all these memories that are popping up from way before last week. The same thing happened again. I'm tired and I promised myself I will not cook lasagna on a weekday night because I'm too tired and it's too much work. And here I am again. Why are you doing this, Stephanie? So you're just feeding the feeling, and that's why it stays longer. If you really isolate the thought and go like, what is actually bothering me? Why am I so angry about this? Oh, it's because I didn't honor my own boundaries. I remember I said I'm not going to cook lasagna on a weekday night, and here I am. So I can also just stop. I'm not finishing this. The bolognese sausage just goes to the freezer. We cook it on a weekend. We have something else instead. When with kids, the intensity of the feeling is, of course, it's much stronger than with adults. So it feels like these 90 seconds, they're like 2 hours, especially when you're out in public. But if you can start putting the time on your phone, and you'll be surprised if you don't feed the tantrum as a parent with like, stop it now, and it's always the same, and I'm not bringing you to Costco anymore, and I already said we're not buying anything. This is how you feed the feeling and the tantrum. Of course, then it stays longer. It takes longer for the child to calm down. But if you're just calm, just validate, I promise you, it doesn't even take 90 seconds. So put a timer on your phone and just wait, and it will be gone.
Oh, I love that. I am so interested to hear, when our parents here try that out, how long it actually goes. If you don't continue, because I can totally relate to the spiral, right? Like one thing leads to another thought, leads to another thought. But if I just stopped at that one first thought, what would happen? Oh, I can't wait to try this. Let's see. So any tips for that first thought? So, or especially, I know a lot of the parents are probably wondering right now with the kids having the meltdowns, any tips for when they have that first thing, when it starts, managing those and not continuing the cycle?
Don't try to stop it. It's actually a good thing that feelings come out, that they don't suppress them, because in the long run, this can lead to depression, not being able to feel the feelings, or to a heightened response, which we often see then with younger kids as anxieties. So if your child has a meltdown and you can already see that it's going to start, what I say to my son is, I can see you're not feeling well. From your face, facial expression, what's going on? Sometimes he hates when I do this. Just leave me alone. So that already shows that I'm invading his space. He needs more space. Okay, so I just give you space. I'm here when you need me. Wait for this very first intense wave, because they don't hear you. They cannot, their brain doesn't absorb anything you're saying. And you don't have to say anything, actually. What we are trying often is just to console them, explain them why we decide that they cannot have a candy before dinner. All the smart reasons we have as adults, they are just in vain. Just don't say anything. You don't have to. Because what they often feel with the big tantrums is this mini grief. I wanted this so badly, and now there is a bigger person that I actually love and trust, and they say, no, how is this even possible? And then comes the wave of sadness and anger. And all you have to do is just sit it out, and it doesn't take long. As soon as they are a little bit calmer, you can start by naming what you see. I see you cried really heavily. I see that, I heard that you were really loud, like your body was really loud and you yelled. What happened? I'm wondering what happened in your body. With very young kids, it helps to say things like, was there a volcano in your stomach? Or was there fire in your chest? Or was there fog in your head? Like whatever it is. However your child likes to describe what they're feeling, that sometimes helps them with the sensations. And that's all you have to do. And don't try to immediately teach them what else they could do, because that overwhelms them as well. So the first thing really is just to give them space to have their big feelings, to name them, to teach them, okay, this was anger. I saw you were very angry. How did it feel in the body? Little printouts on the walls help to point out, was this how you felt? Or was it more like this? And on a very calm moment, at bedtime or in the morning or later during the week, you can say, you remember on Monday when you didn't want to leave the house in the morning because it was snowing and you were cold and you were still tired? You got really upset. What could you do next time when you're so upset instead of yelling? Because the yelling, that didn't make you feel much better, did it? And that helps to the child to isolate the behavior from the self. If we give them more time, if we don't immediately in the moment try to teach them other coping mechanisms, especially when they're very young. That was just the behavior that they had. And now we are talking about what else they could do instead. And that is not, doesn't feel like a threat to the self or shaming. That actually feels, okay, this is so long ago, mommy, especially for children. I don't even connect myself to that situation anymore. But next time I'm angry, I could maybe just tell you, I'm really angry and frustrated. I have to leave. And I need a hug, because a hug always makes me feel better. And don't be surprised if it doesn't always work. So here we really need also patience for the repetition.
Oh, so good. And as an OT, of course, I love that this is working on that interoceptive sense too, our sense of emotion and body feelings and connecting them. Oh, so good. So I know as we sit here, there is at least one mom out there who is feeling so heard. but is also struggling because she feels like she yells too much. And that does make her feel kind of like you said, like she's struggling, like she's feeling it, those big feelings for parents. Yeah. What's something you want to leave her with today?
The best tool, I think, while we heal and while we learn new ways of behaving and new ways of responding, is the tool of repairing. Really learn how to repair with your child. Apologize for the fact that you yelled. Explain them that has nothing to do with them, but that mommy just never really learned how to deal with overwhelm. I tell my child, well, I'm learning as almost 40-year-old woman, I'm learning how to regulate my emotions, just like you. And I think we're learning together. And the other day he said, well, I think I'm already better than you are. And that's true. And we sit there and I apologize. And I ask him how it made him feel. And he gets it out. And I also allow him to say, to call me out and to say, you know, mommy, you need to stop yelling. It's not good when we yell, remember? So the tool of repairing really opens up that communication and the connection with your child that often the yelling stops. Like when we yell, our child shuts down. We are in disconnection with them. When we apologize and we also promise them that we are really doing our best and that we are learning, I have a coach. I told them I have a coach and a therapist. There are people who help me with this so that it just gets less and less. And if you have a really good therapist and coach, then it's absolutely possible to decrease the yelling, that you don't even feel like that's the only way to make me heard in this house. I have to yell. And that's also something a lot of parents think and say, you know, if you would just listen for the first time, then I wouldn't have to yell. But there's so many other tools that we can use when we know child development, because they're not listening because they don't want. Their brains just can't. So it's learning about child development, learning how to repair and to apologize in a different way that really works with them, and doing the work. So as long as you're doing the work, I promise it will always be better than doing nothing.
Oh, it's incredible. So where can our listeners continue to have conversations with you? Where can they find you? What's the best place for them to go?
The best place is on Instagram. So you find me under I am Stephanie Fernandez, Stephanie with an F. And I'm also on Facebook. I have a free Facebook group on conscious parenting that's all about healing yourself. I have a website, stephaniefernandez.com. So I think if you Google me, and conscious parenting, there's many ways that you can find me, but Instagram is the best.
Well, thank you so much for being here. This was incredible, amazing. I loved so much what you had to say, and I know our parents are going to love it too.
Thank you so much. It was nice being with you here.
Thank you for listening to the Food Explorers podcast, a podcast about helping your child learn to become a confident and happy eater. If you love this episode, please make sure to share it with a friend, subscribe, or leave a review wherever you are listening. This helps parents just like you find this podcast and start bringing the magic back into mealtime. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time.